You can hear Boldly Going Nowhere on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
It's Hollywood Movies.
Yeah, it's PG at the movies. All right, welcome to another episode of BGN at the Movies. Well, this week, after going to see the Flying Dog at the Movies presentation, we're going to talk about Time Bandits, a Terry Gilliam film. Actually, Terry Gilliam's first film. Terry Gilliam, as you know, was a former member of the Monty Python troupe.
Yep.
He'd be the if you can't remember what character he'd be, he was the dude who did all the animations.
Yeah. He's him and the rest of the Python boys make numerous appearances in this film.
Yeah. Well, basically this basically was just another Monty Python film.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the thing is it you know, we were watching this film and there was, I think if you see so much of the Python-esque humor, just so much random shit going down, and it sort of detracts. Like, if they had just taken that element out, the movie would have been far more enjoyable, in my opinion.
Well, let me just say that Terry Gilliam is one of my favorite directors. I love, well, most of his movies now. It was all before, but now it's most. Which I guess gives you a clue that I was not a huge fan of this movie, but Brazil is my favorite Terry Gilliam film and also just one of my favorite movies. I love The Fisher King, and 12 Monkeys I think is a great movie, although Colin is a little more on the fence about it. So
I'm not on the fence about it. 12 Monkeys is a fucking bullshit movie.
Okay, you're not on the fence. You're definitely securely on one side of the fence.
Yeah.
Which is inside the prison.
Oh, actually, no. That's not fair.
Okay, well, we can all agree that Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is an awesome movie.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Although surprisingly enough, Sean and I were talking about this right before we actually started recording, but I actually saw another Hunter S. Thompson film literally today. I saw Where the Buffalo Roam, which was an 80s film.
I never even heard of that one.
Yeah, well, and surprisingly enough, Bill Murray was the one who played Hunter S. Thompson in that one.
So how did it compare?
Actually, to be honest, whereas I'll say that Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is the superior film, I think Bill Murray plays a better Hunter S. Thompson than Johnny Depp does.
Really? I mean, that's a bold statement to make.
Is it just acting or truer to the novel?
Here's the thing. If you've ever seen documentaries on Hunter S. Thompson or just, you know, Hunter S. Thompson interviews,
yeah.
If you watch Bill Murray's portrayal of Hunter S. Thompson, you're more convinced that he could be Hunter S. Thompson, whereas Johnny Depp's way over the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Johnny Depp's like a cartoon character version of Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, I would give you that, although that probably is what makes it so entertaining.
Oh no, don't get me wrong.
Because
he really plays up
Hunter S. Thompson in a way that it's like an artistic interpretation of Hunter S. Thompson. It's not like he's not really trying to convince you that he's Hunter S. Thompson. It's like this is his interpretation of what Hunter S. Thompson is.
Right, and see, the thing is, like I
said,
so
it basically created a new character.
Right, and like I said, it's not that I think it's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is the worst film. I think it's the better film. I'm just saying that I believe Bill Murray portrayed Hunter S. Thompson better than Johnny Depp did. That's
all right. Well, let's get back to Time Bandits. So this movie is about a kid, a British kid, who is kind of looks like he's been hit with an ugly stick repeatedly.
I don't agree with you.
A standard British kid with the messed
just
up teeth.
Just a standard British kid. Just your standard issue British kid.
Yeah,
comes in a tea box.
Weird face, big gap teeth, and just kind of beady little eyes.
He's not that bad. Why do you keep bringing that up?
I don't know, because maybe it's because I had to stare at his face for 2 hours, and I didn't like it.
It's hard to stare at British people's faces. You have to, you know, have an affinity for staring at.
So anyways, this kid is like, you know, your typical British trope. He has horrible parents. He hates his He hates his life, hates his family. He likes history, so good for him.
Yeah, and I was actually, Justin and I were talking about this on the ride over here. Anyone else ever notice that British kids in films get, like, the shit end of the stick?
Well, let's say British popular culture in general, literature,
why are you
films,
so mean to me?
Like, Harry Potter, like, Roald Dahl, like, James and the Giant Peach, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Oliver Twist, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Roald Dahl was pretty open about the fact that he hated children.
Yeah, and he wrote children's books. Oh,
that's
the irony.
Why he wrote books to traumatize them.
Yes.
Oh, the irony.
As he was traumatized.
Yeah, have you ever read his autobiography?
Yeah.
Boy, he had a horrible life.
It was awful.
They did some really
messed
really
up things,
messed up things to him. And he got back at society by writing books that people thought were meant for children. So anyways, time bandits, this kid, he's, you know, sleeping one night and a bunch of time traveling dwarves.
Midgets.
They're
dwarves.
Let's call them what they
are. Whatever the PC correct
whatever
term is nowadays.
Hobbits.
Yeah. Thank you.
Or if this is the Cinemax softcore porn movie. Lord of the G-Strings, Throbbits.
Oh, right.
We can talk about that another day.
Yeah.
Whatever term you choose to use, I'm going to go with dwarves. A band of time-traveling dwarves bust into his room, basically mistake him for someone else. Who they never really explained that part, who they thought he was.
They thought he was the supreme being.
They thought this
because he was shining a light in their face at first.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
See, I really didn't get that part. Like, I just thought that, they think he's some guy.
I like how his shoes, he gets the light in his face. He just shoots the gun automatically.
Well, they were running from him.
Beginning
and then.
Basically, they think he's the supreme being who apparently in this movie is the representation of God. And
all right, let's not get hung up on the plot because there really isn't much of one to speak of.
Okay.
Basically, this kid and these dwarves travel through time. They're bandits. That's why the movie's called Time Bandits. They have this map that lets them exploit these holes in time that let them jump to different parts of time and space, and they are using it to basically pull off heists.
Well,
and
the dwarves
get rich.
Are.
Yeah, the dwarves are. The kid just kind of along for the ride, but you know he really likes history, and he's so knowledgeable about history. Like, he knows who Robin Hood is.
There's one movie this reminds me of.
The real Robin Hood.
And this movie might be a remake of this one, but Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, except it didn't have, you know, a third of the heart and soul that Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is. It also did not have George Carlin.
Definite points off there for that movie.
Yeah, it did not have a kick-ass rock soundtrack. Yeah. And again, really
didn't have Keanu.
But a point in its favor. A point in Time Bandits' favor, it did have Sean Connery.
It did have Sean Connery as a Greek king.
Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades.
Was he Agamemnon?
Agamemnon.
Who, in a really inexplicable scene, Kevin, our hero, just pops up in ancient Greece. Sort of saves King Agamemnon's life and then is taken in and within a matter of a day is declared his new son and heir to the throne of Mycenae. So good for him. Good for him. He really is moving up fast, and he's for some reason much happier in a barren desert than he was in his home or anywhere else.
Well, it's because his parents are materialistic boobs.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. So I guess there's kind of a comment on materialism in this film. But really, the message of this film, if there is one, can be summed up in four words. God is a dick.
Or don't piss off God.
No, God is a dick.
Don't piss off God. That's four words also.
Because Kevin's character constantly gets shit on in this movie.
Yeah, I would say it's more God is a dick because Kevin didn't do anything to piss off God. In fact, he helped him. Like, he You know,
and can we have the spoilers for the
what happens is quite sour.
Let's go ahead and skip spoilers because this movie came out in like the 80s.
Yeah, so this is technically, we're fine. Yeah, we've officially passed the statute of limitations.
If you haven't seen it and you don't want us to spoil it,
what's it like? 10 years?
This is your opportunity to
It's like 25 at this
point. Turn off the podcast. Don't turn off the podcast. Now
go cook. We'll wait here. Just go cook something.
Go cook some ramen.
Go cook minute rice.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
All right, come back.
Keep up the good work.
All right, so anyway.
Now that you've got your steaming hot bowl of rice, let's talk about the ending of this movie.
Okay.
So
basically, what happens is Kevin gets taken away from Agamemnon's court, and they basically go around looking for this MacGuffin of the hour.
Which in this case is the most fantastic object in the world.
That's it.
That's what it's called. It's called the most fantastic object in the world.
Doesn't have a name. They don't even know what it looks like. It's just the most fantastic object.
Not even like unobtainium or something.
Nope.
It's a fantastic object and everyone wants it.
Can't find him.
Right. And surprisingly enough, it's in the fortress of ultimate evil.
Yeah, which is in the Age of Legends.
Which is inside a chest, which is inside the tree, which is inside an island which you cannot get to.
The rabbit.
And the fortress is behind a big pane of glass, which it can be easily shattered.
Yeah, apparently it's an invisible barrier, so they're like, how are we going to get through this? And one of them just picks up a skull and just throws it at it. I'm like,
chucks it at it.
Worst fucking barrier ever.
I mean, I guess no one had tried that because no one had ever gotten to the Age of Legends, but if you can't get to it, why do you need all these defenses anyways? Also, there's a giant for some reason. They don't really explain that.
There was an ogre. Well,
there was an ogre with a bad back, a geriatric ogre.
Oh, yeah,
then there was a literal giant. Maybe he was supposed to be Poseidon, Lord of the Ocean.
Or Atlas,
because he was carrying the ship on his head. Or maybe he was Broseidon, King of the Brocean.
Oh, right. Broseidon.
Either way.
Hey, bro.
Don't really explain where he came from, and we don't really care. Anyways, they get to the fortress, they get the map, they battle with the ultimate evil one, and so all the dwarves like go off, and even though they don't have the map, somehow they're able to go to different periods of time and bring reinforcements, like cowboys, knights, a tank. But they didn't have the map, so how did they get to those time periods?
They did explain that.
They didn't explain that at all.
Yes, they did.
How?
Remember when they were hanging up in these cages and they were looking at that Polaroid which had the map on it, and what they said was they were hanging above a hole in time that could get them anywhere in the universe.
But, okay.
Which is why they didn't want to fall into it, which is why they had to...
But then they went in it anyways.
No, they didn't.
Apparently. How did they get to the other time periods to get the reinforcements?
Well, I mean, that's what they went into.
Said. So yes. Even though they didn't, they said, oh, we better not fall into this hole. They then went into the hole anyways in order to go get reinforcements.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Sure. Sure thing. So they, their reinforcements.
and your double speak.
So their reinforcements all get killed easily.
Yeah.
And it looks like the evil one's gonna win, but of course...
Oh, wait, by the way, this does bear mention. The evil one is, what is it? Dillinger from Tron.
Wait, I thought you said he was from Rollerball.
No, that's the Supreme Being. The evil...
Oh, right,
the
sorry.
The evil guy is Dillinger from Tron.
So Tron versus Rollerball?
So, you're right. I knew that he looked familiar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Supreme Being shows up, and he is the guy, he's the villain from the original
Rollerball. Yeah, he's the villain from the original
Rollerball. He's a rich old white man, of course, because he's God. And he basically shows up, destroys the evil one, and sends the kid back to his own time, where it turns out, of course, like, I saw this coming. I was like, I really did not want this to happen, but I was like, I'm not going to be surprised if this happens. It was all a dream. He wakes up in his bed.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't, because he still has the Polaroids. Mm-hmm. But his house is on fire.
Yeah, I know. It's like, so seriously, God sends him from this battle where he's just defeated evil, refused to let the map fall into the wrong hands, and what does he do? Sends him back to a fucking burning building.
Sends him into the building of a burning house. And then, so Sean Connery, who was King Agamemnon, turns out in a sort of ripped straight from Wizard of Oz, is the firefighter who rescues him from his burning house. And so I'm like, oh, great, he is real, you know? And then here's the kicker. A chunk of evil is inside a toaster oven, and his shitty, dumbass parents decide that they should touch it.
Like, he literally sees the chunk of evil, like, radiating in, like, their broken toaster oven, right?
And he says, don't touch it. It's like, evil.
Mom and Dad, don't touch it. It's evil. And what do? They both touch it at the exact same moment.
And, of course, they blow up. And that kid's parents just blew up.
When I watched that, I was around, like, 12 years old. Part of me hated it, but part of me loved it. Part of me was like, that's right, you don't listen.
Yeah, I mean, his parents were dumb, and they were horrible people. I don't have a problem with them blowing up. But then I was like, okay, his parents blew up. So I was like, oh, so Sean Connery, the firefighter, is going to be like, hey, kid, come along with me, and then adopt him, and he's going to live happily ever after. Great, good ending. No, Sean Connery, the firefighter, gives him this really, like, shitty, like, wink.
He just leans out the window of the fire truck, winks,
and then gets in his truck and leaves. And so the kid is standing on the front lawn in front of his house, which has burned to the ground. His parents have just blown up, and not a single soul is moving to, like, comfort him or help him in any way. And he's standing there. He's now an orphan. And we zoom out to show a uncaring, unfeeling universe ruled over by a petty, out-of-touch god who then rolls up the map and is just like, well, all right, let's go see what's on TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, the children of Great Britain.
It's like, all right, well, that was fun. I guess it's time to go watch Maury. So I'm just like, what is the message of this movie? There can only be one message. God is a dick.
She's the father.
It's, you know, and the thing was, like, I thought, you know, maybe there was...
I didn't say I may have no feelings.
I thought the message was going to be that commentary about how materialism begets evil and all that. But, I mean, it really is just basic. It's God is a dick.
Yeah, because
I don't like that message. I didn't like it. God's not a dick.
Here's the other thing about the whole materialism or technology angle. So the ultimate evil one, who can kill people with, like, literally just by pointing at them and can turn people into animals and do all this stuff. His ultimate master plan is to learn how computers work. Like, you're the ultimate being of evil. Yeah, I think if that movie was updated for today, it would be about he wants to learn how social networking works. He wants to learn how the tweeters work.
I want to know how Twitter works.
Is like, I will learn how digital watches work. Once I learn how digital watches work, I'll learn how calculators work. Once I learn how calculators work,
I'll learn how VCRs work.
Once I learn how VCRs work, I'll learn how computers work. It's like, all right, great. Go take a class at your community college.
There's a community college just down the street.
Check out one of those dummies books. Okay.
Yeah, really. There's books. Maybe that was an offsided message. Maybe then the message was read, or your parents will blow up.
Read, or your parents will blow up. And you'll be an abandoned orphan.
Yeah. Read.
Don't be a British child.
Read about stuff you want to learn.
So, that's bullshit. Nothing in this movie was explained. Nothing made sense. Okay, that's fine. It's a Monty Python film. It's absurd. But here's the thing. A lot of the, like, jokes or, like, absurd situations fell flat to me because of one problem that I think is a common shortcoming of movies from this time period, which is, let's say, late 70s, early 80s. Just terrible sound mixing. You can't understand what anyone is saying.
It was so bad.
I mean, it combined terrible sound mixing with really thick British accents. You have no idea what's going on.
Well, let's discuss my favorite part, and I think yours as well. John Cleese as Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And that hat. I want that hat. I really do. That hat is awesome.
It was fantastic. One redeeming part of this movie was the scene with Robin Hood, and it was funny. Because John Cleese is awesome. John Cleese is awesome no matter what he's in.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it was
I've
like...
I've met pole people.
He's like, you know, you don't understand. This is our stuff. He's like, yes, with pole, we'll be so much better off.
Yes.
Yeah, but...
Have you met the poor? They're wonderful people. Don't have two pennies to rub together, but of course, that's why they're poor.
And they're all laughing. It's like, I am so uncomfortable right now. That was the beauty of it. It was, he made you, like, he was going through this conversation and you were so uncomfortable, but yet you couldn't look away. That was the beauty of it. And then it's like, at the end of it, he's just like, what horrible people.
Yeah. It was just like out of nowhere.
Out of all the movies, I think this one had more close-ups than any other film, because usually with Monty Python movies, you'll have like this wide angle and mm-hmm. just let stuff happen, and you just watch stuff goes on in the background. You really have to pay attention, and you can watch it again and catch something different every time. But this movie, it felt had a more an 80s feel, feel and like composition.
Yeah, and I mean,
you can definitely tell when they cut in scenes at some point, especially when they were handing out the
treasure stuff. And the guy was punching him.
At one point you could see like stop, and it was like a difference.
Is that really necessary? He says, "Yes, it is."
Well, all right, carry on then. Jolly good.
I'll accept a punch in the face. Someone gives me a gold vase.
Gives you a single mug.
A single gold vase.
I don't understand why it's like when. Have you ever noticed in like
Sean,
movies
you have
and
chosen poorly,
like movies and cartoons and
I'm
stuff?
Pick that wood crappy thing.
Have you ever noticed when people get treasure, the treasure always consists of cups? Why is it always like cups?
Holy Grail.
I guess is that the sort of analogy
that
they're going for?
The fact is, they're saving all these cups, and they're
going to cups really worth that much money?
The thing, this is my theory. They're going to save all these cups, and they're going to have the best game of beer pong ever.
It's chalice pong.
Chalice pong.
Chalice pong. Yeah, there you go.
And the ball is the Quidditch ball
just
from Harry Potter.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Is the Quidditch.
Yes. It'd be really hard to play beer pong with the Quidditch because it would keep flying away. Or, yeah, with the snitch, I mean.
Snitch.
It would keep flying
no one
away.
Likes the snitch.
The snitch winner snatch. Sorry.
That totally puts a whole new spin on those shows in Thailand, you know, the ping pong balls coming out of the girls, you know, snatch. The snitch would be coming out of her snatch. Oh. It would be like that. All you hear is a faint click and she'd be like, "That feels good." Oh god, it's cutting into me.
You're doing magic, Harry. Doing magic.
You want to see me make this snitch disappear?
He needs a snitch.
Is that the whole crux?
Oh, God.
The snitch glove.
Hermione, you've got a whole crux in you. I need to get in there and destroy it.
Oh, look at the time.
Gonna have to use this basilisk tusk. I'm uncomfortable with the way things are going. No, okay. I mean, I think we've pretty much covered everything in this movie. Other than the Robin Hood scene, just a lot of the jokes fell flat to me. Like, the thing with that, like, couple that keeps, like, reappearing where, like, just, like, this really ugly woman and then guy who's like, oh, no, the problem.
Yeah,
Problem's happening again.
Michael Palin and Shelley Winters.
Yeah, like, okay, I don't know what the problem is. But
I do like how Bilbo was
Napoleon.
Nation.
Oh, yeah.
Bilbo was Napoleon.
Ian Holm.
I did not even realize that.
Yeah, Ian Holm was Napoleon.
I like little things slapping. I like little things fighting and slapping each other.
The Napoleon scene was okay. Like the part where he's actually like watching the performance, the little theater. Okay, that was cute. That was fine. But then the scene where they're at his like place and he's just talking and
he's
getting
drinking
drunk,
and naming off really short dictators.
Yeah, it just dragged on way longer. It's like, we get the joke. He likes short people. Like, we get it. You don't have to keep naming more people.
I mean, seriously, we know he's got a Napoleon complex. That's why they named it after him.
And the thing is, I hate, that's such a tired, like,
joke,
because if you read any of those, like, you know, things where, like, oh, common misconceptions, it's that Napoleon was not that short. I mean, he was, like, people just in general were shorter then, but he was not actually that much below average for that time period.
Right, and see, the thing is,
he wasn't super short. That's what people don't
The thing that I actually, get. Yeah, that's the thing. I think that, you know, going back to what the comparison you made earlier, Sean, is that this movie focused too much on the misconception that Napoleon was short, whereas Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure didn't.
Yeah.
They never made one short joke in that entire film. Right. And it was shot around the same time frame.
I mean, he was short. Yeah. Like, they made him short, but they didn't dwell on that fact.
No.
They dwelled more on the fact that he was, like, hyperactive and obnoxious.
I think it's time for ratings, and I would rate this about 2 out of 5 snitches.
2 out of 5 snitches?
We're going to change the rating every time.
Colin?
I decree this.
I'm going to go with Sean on this. I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 bloody snitches.
Okay, we're changing to bloody snitches. Well, if it's a bloody snitches, I'll change mine to one.
Well, it's either that or bloody snitches.
That can be our new snitches. That can be our new wizard rock band, the bloody snitches. Why are those snitches bloody? You don't want to know.
Why is there a snitch in my snatch?
I don't know, Hermione. Why are these snitches bloody? I don't want to talk about it.
I just got back in surgery.
I don't want to talk about it, Ron.
Your girlfriend's going to destroy you for this.
Somebody stole my potion.
Mr. Colton. Colin, you gave it 2.
I'm honestly, yeah, this is probably Terry Gilliam's weakest film that I've seen.
Ben?
One bloody snitch.
One bloody snitch.
I mean, it's really bad.
Yeah, I'll give it 1.5. I'll give it 1.5 bloody snitches because I like the Robin Hood scene.
That's the reason I gave it a 2.
Yeah, it's 1.5. That's being generous with my snitches.
If people don't like the bloody snitches, it's going to change. I think from now on, we're going to use different.
Yeah, we'll use different things every time.
It could be fish and chips. Next time.
We'll never use stars. I never want to use stars.
Yeah, stars are dumb.
Yeah, Netflix uses them. I mean, Leonard Maltin uses them.
It's a common rating system. We are anything
God,
but
guys,
common.
Come up with a new rating system. Come up with a new shape. All right? There are other shapes out there.
Triangles.
Hexagons.
Yeah. Yeah.
4 out of 5 hexagons.
3 out of 5 rhombi.
All right. Well, as we mention every time we do this, every time we do a series like this, go to the Flying Dog movie series at the Wyburn Center.
Yeah, I don't hold Flying Dog. I believe we do not hold this against Flying Dog for showing this movie. Because we still love Flying Dog, and it was still fun to go see it in a theater with a bunch of other people. But
yeah, I still like Flying Dog.
I'm not sure why they picked that movie, because it didn't seem like there was a lot of crowd I heard almost no laughter in this movie at all.
You know what it is? It's because of the fact that
someone must have won.
4 out of the 6 Monty Python members were involved in the production of this film. So a lot of people just have the common misconception, Monty Python had something to do with it.
So it must be
funny.
Yeah.
It really isn't.
Next month is
either The Princess Bride or Clockwork Orange.
Either way, those are going to be awesome.
Either one of those two. So if you miss this month, okay, you're fine. But next month, you got to be there for it.
You better be there.
It's going to be awesome.
Be there or be a rhombus.
Yes.
Oh, God. All right, well, until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Ben Price.
And
this is BGN at the Movies.
Only Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. As a proud citizen of the Podcast Refugee Nation, you can sponsor a Boldly Going Nowhere shows segment. Click on the right-hand side of the magical box on the page. It's that easy! For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.
The actor, see Mr.